Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the BC Members Call on August 4th, 2016. On the call today, we have Paul Mitchell, Nivaldo Cueto, Angie Graves, Chris Wilson, John Berard, Elisa Cooper, Barbara Warner, Arinola Akinyemi, Andrew Harris, Denise Michelle, Claudia Martinuzzi, Alex Deacon, Lawrence Olawale-Roberts, Hiba Hussein, Jay Sadowski, Steve Zelbianco, Cecilia Smith, Jay Chapman, Jinsen Olufie, Ben Lee, and Susan Kawaguchi. We have apologies from Andy Abrams, Andrew Mack, Kevin Audrit, and Marie Patullo. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much. And over to you, Chris.
Thank you, Chantel. Thanks, everybody, for participating on today's call. Certainly appreciate it. I know we, per usual, we have a fair amount to discuss. So why don't I just go ahead and turn it over to Steve to dive into the policy calendar. Steve?
Thank you, Chris. Folks, I distributed the policy calendar yesterday. Sorry that it was a little later than usual. And I thought I would dive right in on the recently filed, only one since our last call. And that was on the 29th of July. We filed a very brief comment on the fellowship program application process. Thanks again to Andrew Mack and Jimson for drafting that. Now we turn to the current set of ICANN public comments. There are quite a few that are currently open. The first two have been drafted thanks to Barbara Warner, with help from Hiba Hussein and Jay Sadowski, have prepared two comments. The one is due on the 7th of August, over the weekend, and the other is due on the 11th. And fortunately, we have the opportunity to review them both, and it was the first attachment to the document that I circulated. This is a comment regarding the post-transition IANA, known as PTI. And the PTI is a wholly owned ICANN subsidiary that the CCWG and CWG called for, so that the functions of naming and eventually protocols and numbers would all be managed by assets and personnel inside of PTI. And it's meant to create a better path for separability in the ultimate case of having to take naming numbers or protocols out of ICANN. But more importantly, it provides an accountable central place where PTI will conduct the transition, the transactions that IANA has done in the past. So what I'd like to do is invite you to open that first attachment, since it has both comments in it. I'll give Barbara, Hiba, and Jay an opportunity to discuss what was circulated, but we would like to try to get on this call to surface any further edits or concerns before we try to finalize this over the weekend. So, Barbara, anything you'd like to add in the way of explanation?
Thanks, and for the recording, this is Barbara Warner. And Steve, you did an excellent job of previewing it. I think, you know, Hiba, Jay, and I, in looking at these documents, particularly with respect to the governance documents, kind of doing a side-by-side comparison, we felt that basically, for want of a better description, it was kind of a copy-and-paste approach. But we did not feel that was all that bad because of what NTIA had expressed in its IANA transition proposal assessment, that the work that was done in developing a conflict of interest policy, a board code of conduct, expected standards of behavior for ICANN would serve as an excellent model for developing comparable documents for the PTI. This is what NTIA had said. So we all went through and kind of did a side-by-side assessment, and we felt that it all looked well and good, but we felt in the interest of consistency with BC's earlier comments that we reinsert our concerns with and under the expected standards of conduct section with respect to sexual harassment and how we address that when ICANN put that out for comment earlier. So what I've done basically is just sort of, kind of redraft and adapt what we said with respect to sexual harassment into the PTI expected standards of comment. And then Hiba, God bless her, in her side-by-side, picked up an omission in the conflicts of interest policy. I think it was probably just an omission. But, again, for the interest of consistency, and so the documents of the PTI comport with those of ICANN that they address that omission with respect to, the involvement of an independent evaluation expert. So that, in a nutshell, is how we approached the governance documents. Maybe I'll just stop there and invite my co-drafters to jump in.
Yeah, Barbara, let's do the three governance documents, and then we'll quickly turn to the bylaws. And again, folks, these three governance documents are the conflict of interest policy for PTI, the board's code of conduct, and the expected standards of behavior. And all of this is detailed in the first attachment to the policy calendar email that I sent last night. Eva and Jay, any further comment on that, or we'll turn to the bylaws next?
This is Eva. I just want to thank Barbara. I think she did an amazing job drafting the comments and giving an overview, so nothing to add.
Thanks, Eva. All right, let's turn to bylaws. So, Barbara, the draft PTI bylaws, we have about almost a three-page draft, and these are due August the 11th, so we have more time on the draft PTI bylaws. But give us some highlights of what's in there, and then Jay and Heba, you should add as well. Go ahead, Barbara.
Thanks so much. What we did with in reviewing the draft PTI bylaws is, quite honestly, we went to the original request for comment from ICANN. And basically what ICANN staff did is they highlighted three areas where ICANN staff had to kind of fill in gaps. There were certain issues that weren't very specifically addressed in the March 10th approved combined package for the IANA transition. And so what we did is we commented on staff additions, if you will, to the PTI bylaws. And the first element was the selection of the PTI chair. The second one was a recommendation for a quorum, what would constitute a quorum for PTI meetings. The third was a higher PTI board voting threshold on certain issues. And then finally, thanks to Jay, we've added another element concerning limiting the PTI's remit. Going to the first one, selection of the PTI chair, since this was not vetted by the community when the March 10 proposal was approved, ICANN staff felt that this should be brought to everyone's attention. There is a proposal that the chair be drawn from one of the two nominating committee nominated directors. You may recall that the PTI will be composed of about five members, three of which will be ICANN appointed, and two would be appointed through the nominating committee process. ICANN committee staff acknowledged that there had been concern raised at this proposal that the chair be drawn from the NOMCOM nominated directors might be challenging. And we agreed with that. We felt that it may be very difficult to find the person that has the requisite leadership skills as well as a technical understanding of the IANA process and management of the DNS system. So what we've proposed is that maybe that be rather than a mandate that this person be drawn from the NOMCOM candidates, that we propose an aspirational approach, that we can certainly have this as a goal, that this PTI board chair would be drawn from one of the NOMCOM candidates, but we suggested that maybe after about a four-month period, if that still didn't yield any appropriate candidate, we'd be released from that requirement and be able to draw from one of the ICANN-nominated directors to fill that position. And then we also added some language expressing our appreciation that under the additional qualifications outlined that, again, the prohibition of a national government official serving as a PTI director and similar restrictions on individuals serving on the SO and ACs, the nominating committee, or EC administration to ensure that no one segment of the community enjoys greater influence in PTI governance. So that was one element, shall we say, the aspirational goal for the selection of the PTI board chairman. The second one concerned recommended quorums for the PTI board meetings. This was not specified in the March 10 agreement. What staff has suggested is that a quorum be defined as a majority, which would be three people, and that it include at least one ICANN-nominated director and one of the NOMCOM-nominated directors. And basically, we felt that was a sound approach, that would ensure legitimacy, a perceived legitimacy of the PTI board's work. The final element concerned the higher threshold for certain issues, and we included a footnote that details what those issues would be. Basically, we agreed with ICANN staff that by defining supermajority as it's referenced throughout the March 10 document, that a four-fifths formula...
Just hang on a second, Barbara.
Yeah, okay.
Chantel, that's usually something you can remedy. Can you look into that, please? Go ahead, Barbara.
No, just very briefly, that we felt a four-fifths majority would help to have, for those high-threshold issues, those very important issues that are detailed in footnote number one on page three, that would help to avoid a scenario in which one director would hold up timely action on an important governance matter. So we basically thought that was a sound approach also. Then finally, we included language concerning PTI's remit, and that, giving credit where credit is due, was Jay's suggestion. So, Jay, why don't I turn it over to you?
Thanks, Barbara. So as part of drafting this comment and doing my edits, I had gone through and reviewed other comments that the BC had made in regards to PTI, and one of the recurring themes I noticed was that the BC had encouraged that PTI's remit be limited so that it doesn't become another venue where policies that happen at ICANN could be retraded or relitigated, because right now today, if something happens at ICANN, you're not going to go to, the folks running the IANA functions and say, hey, I'm really mad about this. Let's change something. I felt that the bylaws, as they were drafted, could have been a little bit more explicit in limiting PTI's, functions to a pure operational role and not a policy-setting role. And that's really where I was coming from.
Thank you, Jay, Barbara, and Heva. I will separate these two comments. They're in a combined draft there. I will separate them and send out a last call later today for the PTI governance documents that's due on the 7th of August. And then I'll send out a full review for just the PTI bylaws. And everyone will have until August the 11th to get back to us on that. And thanks again to all the work on that drafting. I don't see any other hands up. So let me move to the next item. It has to do with the proposed .com registry agreement. The comments closed the 12th of August. We have some time. And the only amendment to the agreement was to extend the term of the .com agreement to coincide with the term of the new root zone maintainer agreement that ICANN has negotiated with VeriSign as we transition out of having NTIA be the contractor with VeriSign. And that expires in 2024, so these were aligned to get to 2024. And on the last call, and since then, we've had a little bit of correspondence back and forth. We don't have a volunteer to draft this comment yet, so it may fall to me to collect comments that others have filed. Phil Corwin, I see your hand up. Go ahead.
Yes, Dave, can you hear me?
We do. I was going to walk through the thing.
Yeah, walk through it. I was just putting my hand up to claim place in line. I'll comment when you're
excellent.
Done presenting.
You're first. And speaking of that, Marilyn had both on the call and in an email supported this change because it maintains the stability through this transition period. Phil, and I know you'll speak for yourself, you thought it was reasonable. And you did point out the fact that the 2024 date is the same date that I guess VeriSign would obtain if it did the presumptive renewal of its current contract in 2018 plus 6 years is 2024. So I think these dates are supposed to sort of align. And Phil did suggest that we ask a question about the cooperative agreement. Now, Denise Michelle on the last call said, I think it's a great idea. We use this as an opportunity to reiterate implementation of FIC Who Is in VeriSign's registries, ComJobs and NET. and we should reiterate that as part of this comment. I added my own perspective that the current IRT, the implementation review team, have already committed to early 2018 for .com implementation of FICU is. But in Helsinki, I noted at the meeting that was held to this IRT that I worry that data privacy laws, which prohibit the transfer of data on a citizen to someplace like the United States where VeriSign would hold its registry servers, I'd hate this, for that to become an excuse to further delay implementation of FICU is. So I made the point that we ought to understand the flexibility that FICU is functionality, at least for some registrars, might be done through federated access or centralized access as opposed to moving data across national borders. It shouldn't matter at all to those of us that use Whois that we have a single place to go to get Whois. It shouldn't matter to us whether that data happens to live in servers at VeriSign in Virginia or does it live in Ireland or the Netherlands on the registrar server, as long as we get a single way of accessing it through the same protocol. And then finally, Chris Wilson just yesterday suggested that maybe the BC could encourage VeriSign to adopt the safeguards or public interest commitments that are present for new GTLDs and encourage VeriSign to unilaterally, I guess voluntarily, adopt those in .com. So with that, let's take a cue on this. We do need a volunteer, and if you don't have one, I'll be piecing it together. Phil Corwin, you're first.
Okay, thank you, Steve. I would normally volunteer, but I'm leaving early tomorrow morning for a week's vacation, and just I'm unplugging from the grid completely, or as completely as possible. On the points on operational stability and FICUIS, no problem with that. On the stability, I would point out, and I'm preparing a comment letter for ICA, so I've been looking at this. One point we might want to raise is that I think Akram makes a good case in his blog for having the terms of the RZMA and the .com already tied together. But as he explains it, the technical operations are so inextricably intertwined right now that it's questionable how the new RZMA contains both transition and termination provisions in the event that VeriSign ever wants to pull out of the function, or the ICANN community wants a different provider, or they fail in some technical way. And so we might ask ICANN to look at that. How would they ever actually implement that when everything's so tied together right now? On the termination date, I'd reiterate again, with VeriSign's right of presumptive renewal, there's absolutely no question, based on their record of performance, that they're going to get .com renewed and continue to operate it in 2018 and we'll get a six-year extension under the contract. So it's really a distinction without a difference whether it's done now or then. The one salutary effect that it has, and this is something that should please the BC, is that by doing this six-year extension, by bringing the contract out to 2024 by extension rather than a renewal process in 2018, it removes the possibility for GDD staff to try to impose URS and other new TLD RPMs by contract negotiations. They did last year. That was something the BC expressed concern about, and leaves that policy decision to the Rights Protection Measure Review Working Group, which is going to be looking at that. It may well recommend that URS and some of the others be applied to legacy domains, but that's a decision that should be made by the community. It's a policy decision. So this takes it out of the hands of staff, hopefully. It should take it out. And those are the main points, so I hope that's helpful. Oh, and the last thing I'd mention is that this extension has absolutely no effect one way or the other on the current price freeze on .com. That was imposed by NTIA in 2012. It's part of the cooperative agreement, which runs through 2018, the current one. The cooperative agreement contains two things, basically. The current RZMA between NTIA and VeriSign, which is going to be dissolved when the transition happens, could be dissolved as soon as 2 months, and contains the .com price freeze. So after the transition, the only thing that'll be left that's operational is the price freeze. VeriSign always has the right under the current cooperative agreement to ask for the relaxation of pricing restrictions if they think that market conditions have changed to restrict their pricing power. The decision by NTIA and the next administration, whoever's running the country, about whether to terminate the cooperative agreement or continue it, and whether to let the price cap dissolve or keep some form of pricing restriction on .com, that's an issue that the government's going to look at in 2 years. It's not affected by this extension one way or the other. So I hope that's pretty much all I have to say on this. And
okay,
if the BC wants to adopt any of those ideas in its comment letter, I'd be happy to see them reflected. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. Let's go to Heba and then Chris Wilson.
Hi, this is Heba Hussain for the record. I just wanted to quickly note, I chatted with Andy before he left, and we do think that in the interest of fairness, it's important that the adoption of RPM by .com is consistent with new GTLD. So, you know, we're looking forward to discussing the details with this group, but the new GTLDs do have new kind of RPMs that are pretty important, and we don't think it necessarily makes sense for .com to be totally different from that.
Heba, to be clear then, not just FICWHO is, but a more general sense of RPMs, like you're talking about Trademark Clearinghouse, for instance, or URS?
Yes, exactly. And we do think, you know, it's important to go through the consensus policy process, of course, but before, you know, mandating anything. But trying
It turns out that if we did RPMs like Trademark Clearinghouse through consensus policy, they would be binding immediately on every registry, old and new. So just so I understand clearly, you're suggesting we add to our comment that the new GTLD RPMs, once they become consensus policy, would be binding upon VeriSign immediately.
I think so. I can double check with Andy, but I was not aware of the immediate.
Got it.
Implications.
Okay, then I'll try to summarize after this call's over and put this out for general comment, and that'll be a chance for you and Andy to clarify. Okay?
Fantastic. Thank you.
Got it. Chris Wilson.
Yeah, so actually maybe this dovetails with my suggestion. So, and also probably a little additional color to Phil's comment, and certainly keeping, I think, consistent with the BC's position on opposition to sort of top-down imposition of policy outside consensus policy on registries. I think, you know, the BC has also taken the position that obviously if a registry wants on its own volition to adopt any and all safeguards or picks that otherwise don't apply to them, that would apply to them, I think we support that generally. So my suggestion would be if it's an opportunity for the BC to sort of suggest, maybe to Heba's point, I think, you know, there's an interest that there be a more level playing field with legacy and new GTLDs with regard to safeguards and picks, that we at least encourage VeriSign on its own volition to adopt those and not necessarily wait if they feel comfortable to go ahead and do that now and not necessarily wait for a PDP consensus based policy. You know, we're not asking ICANN to impose them on VeriSign, but simply using it as an opportunity to sort of make a point from the BC's perspective that we think there should be a more level playing field, and this comment period is simply an opportunity to make that comment. So that's where I was coming from that. I think that is consistent with the BC approach up to this point. But if not, I welcome further thoughts.
Thank you, Chris. Marilyn Cade and then Phil Corwin. Can't hear you, Marilyn. Let's go to Phil Corwin.
Well, yeah, I just want to comment on what Chris and Heba just said. I think if you're going to talk about encouraging VeriSign to adopt something voluntarily, you need to think about the legal aspects. .com registrants have agreed to be bound by the UDRP. They have not agreed to be bound by URS or other new TLDs safeguards because they're not Verisign is not legally required to be under them, which it would be if they become consensus policies, which may well be the result for the ones that are applicable as a result of the RPM review working group that's going forward right now. But you might have a situation where if a registry voluntarily agrees to be covered by something, but it's not in the contract, that a registrant hit by a URS could say, wait a minute, that I never agreed to that, and it creates a legal issue. So I would urge caution on that point.
Phil, could you clarify? Let's suppose we did a consensus policy that URS is required in all registries immediately, and that contract amendment would be made to the registry contract. You're suggesting that registrants could object because they didn't have it in their terms.
You know, I'd have to look at their standard language that's in all registrant agreements with ICANN-accredited registrars require them to be consent when they register to use their service and obtain domains to be bound by the UDRP, and I believe any other all existing consensus policies and any future ones. But there's a legal question mark about whether they would be bound to a URS that wasn't imposed through a consensus policy procedure. So that's why I'm urging caution on
got it.
That. The so-called voluntary agreement to URS by CAT Pro and Travel last year didn't have that impediment because they agreed to have that put in their new contracts.
Right.
But it wouldn't be in VeriSign's contract. It would take an amendment to the contract for them to be bound by URS. And that's not on the table here.
Unless it was consensus policies.
It's consensus policy, which might well be the result of the recommendations of the RPM review working group.
Right, and it will take some time, and so far at least that's what Andy and Heba made the same point, is that anything that becomes consensus policy becomes immediately binding.
Right, and then there would be no legal question. The registrants would clearly be bound if it becomes a consensus policy.
All right, thank you, Phil. Marilyn Kay, do we have you yet? Still not hearing Marilyn. All right, so thanks, everyone, for this input. I will try to summarize this and circulate it again prior to the August 12th. And I guess at this – go ahead.
This is Chris. I just want to – I had my hand up, so let me just throw one more comment there. I think – I mean, Phil, your point is well taken. I will simply suggest that, if nothing else, this is an opportunity for the BC to state a preference for a level playing field, notwithstanding – understanding that there are nuances there, et cetera. But I think it's, you know, this is an opportunity for the BC to at least make that point, and taking into consideration that we don't support top-down imposition, but that we would like to see a level playing field here, and you know, just sort of leaving it at that. So, thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. And I'll try to word it that way and circulate that. And Marilyn, I still don't have you on audio. So unless you've got something to correct that, we'll have to just take what you have in the chat. All right, we have a handful of other items. I'll quickly go through. Do we have any volunteers interested in doing a comment on number 4 here, which is new operating procedures for GNSO elections? This is something that a number of you who have been on council are very familiar with, and it would be outstanding to have one of our counselors be able to help us with this one. Number 5 is the new two-character measures for two-character labels. This is to avoid confusion with country codes, you know, .uk, .de, and those comments don't close until the 17th of August. But these are measures that a registry would implement in order to release reservations at the second level. So think about things like .hp, Hewlett-Packard, a global provider, who goes by the two letters HP. QQ is a famous company based in China. Those are examples of letter, two-character labels that would be, under this new procedure, potentially released by all the registries in the new GTLD round to suit the needs of a business registrant. And business registrants are among the interests that the mission statement of our BC is there to serve. So this would be an outstanding opportunity for a BC member who hasn't maybe drafted a comment before to dive into a relatively easy assignment where the BC's comments would be somewhat limited, but try to support businesses who may have a two-character name. Looking for a volunteer to take this on. You've got plenty of time to work on it, and I can provide a lot of help. It's not due till the 17th of August. Hey, Susan Kawaguchi, thanks for signing up for number 4. Thank you, Susan. Okay. Let's move to the next one, which was Andy Abrams is not on the call today, but I'm pretty sure that he'll volunteer to draft a BC comment on country and territory names within another set of new GTLDs. And number 7 is the string similarity process review, but it's really just for country code CCTLDs. It's not for generic TLDs. I put it in here in case anybody was interested in following it. And if so, it'd be a great opportunity for you to read that and make a comment on it. We only have 2 others, but they're not due until September. So I will put those off while noting that Angie Graves has got number 9 in her capable hands, and she's on that panel, and Angie will be drafting a comment for us on that. And then, Arinola, I'll note that you're going to join Susan on number 4. Do I have any other final volunteers who can sign up on number 5 or 6 before I'm 5 or 7 before I move it over to Phil and Susan? All right, Phil and Susan, under Channel 2 for GNSO, all we've got in here is a recap of the resolutions you adopted on the 21st of July, but any opportunity for you guys to update us on what Council is working on?
This is Susan. Actually, it's pretty quiet. We're not supposed to have a meeting in August, except that we are going to have an email ballot to vote on the CSC, the IANA CSC selection of liaison, GNSO liaison and CCNSO liaison. So all of the candidates have been reviewed and been selected by the, we had one position to fill and we only had one candidate. So James Gannon is the candidate. And the but the GNSO will vote on the full selection sometime in the next few days, between the 6th and the 9th.
Phil, anything to add on Council?
Yeah, not really, Steve, other than that vote by email coming up. It's very quiet, and our next meeting's the first week of September. So it's really very little to report from Council at the moment. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, Steve, I did want to raise one issue, which I know just to make BC members aware, and this involves you directly. There was an email sent 2-3 days ago about the CCWG accountability meeting in Hyderabad, and I was surprised to see that it's taking place the day before the official start of the meeting. It's already a week-long meeting, and that means that anyone who's not a funded traveler for that group who wants to participate has to come in and spend 8 days in Hyderabad and bear their own expenses for that extra day. I thought the whole aim of this new meeting program was to avoid meetings of groups outside the time frames for the official meeting.
And Phil, that is certainly true. And the last thing I want to do is spend 8 days in Hyderabad. But CCWG had a pretty strong consensus that we needed a face-to-face on the Workstream 2 projects, many of which are due early in 2017. So I believe this was an exception that was granted to the CCWG based on sort of a bottom-up consensus that we needed an extra day. I don't love the idea either.
Yeah, neither do I, and seeing that I'm trying to be involved in 3 of those Workstream 2 areas, I'm probably going to have to come in and bear the cost of that extra day and spend the 8 days in Hyderabad, but I was just surprised to see it and wanted to raise it so other BC members were aware of it as well. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, thank you, Phil. So Cheryl Miller is not with us on today's call. I'll skip the CSG liaison. And Channel 3, I recapped at the bottom of Channel 3 some things that we've been working on in the past. I don't have any news on these items other than the Republican Party platform document here in the United States contains some pretty serious rhetoric about the IANA transition. I'm not going to read it out loud, but it's at the bottom of page 4. And then I also included an update on Workstream 2. We've got superb participation from BC members in Workstream 2. For instance, this morning I attended one of the first calls was for the SOAC accountability, and many of these Workstream 2 projects are just beginning to kick off this week and next with either 60 or 90-minute phone calls leading up to some drafting of documents. So if there are any other questions or comments on policy, raise your hand now. I'll turn it back over to you, Chris, with 22 minutes to go.
Thanks, Steve. And, this is Chris. And I will just say, with regard to at least the transparency subgroup, since I'm a co-rapporteur for that group, we are having our first call at 1900 UTC today, which is 3 o'clock Eastern time today. So for those that aren't aware of that, that is the status there. So we've just begun in our STAR work as well. All right. Chantel, if you could go ahead and put the agenda back up. I think we've got Jensen. Are you still available?
Yeah, Chris, I'm right here.
Great. And with regard to CSG report, there will be a CSG XCOM call on August 30th, and the purpose of that call will be to begin game planning for Hyderabad and CSG activities at that meeting. So we'll probably have more to report maybe, in the first September meeting for the BC, but just let folks know there will be a CSG XCOM call at the end of August. And Cheryl will be on that call. I expect to be on that call, too. So there is that to report. Okay, Jensen, why don't you go ahead and provide your report for us on operations and finance.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Thank you, Steve. Also to know that actually on the jurisdiction as well, in the workstream too. Now to the finance and operations. I would like to begin by appreciating members that pay their dues and also those yet to pay to do so. Though at this point, about 50% are paid, which is commendable. So the second invoice that will be going out in less than a fortnight, most likely on the August 15th. So I'm happy to inform you that we now have a U.S. bank account, following the acquisition of our EIN. We have a bank account in Spain already, which we've been using, Malaga specifically. So right now, as I said, we have one open in the U.S., in Washington, D.C., the Wells Fargo. So in this respect, we are currently working on an integrated online payment platform to our website so that members wishing to use that option can easily pay their dues. On operations, we continue to engage with member cliques to ensure that the application we have meets our workflow requirements. We have another one yesterday. We had another one yesterday, so we continue to engage them. So we are really hoping that we can tidy up also our charter revision. I'm hoping we can tidy up the charter revision process so that we can finalize the membership registration page, because this is supposed to be automated. Once it's automated, once anybody comes in to register on our portal, we can get the data sent to the credential committee, and once they are done, it can be the prospective member can then be communicated to either pay or accept the approval. So we will appreciate that we tidy up the charter review, especially with the form, so that we can finalize the workflow on the registration page and a few other pages as well. And then finally, as I communicated earlier on the GNSO Council election, So 2 weeks of nomination opens on Monday, 15 August, to Friday, August 26th. And it will be followed by a one-week discussion period and candidate call on Monday, 29th of August. So voting will commence immediately afterwards, till Monday, September 6th. And result will be announced immediately afterwards. As also noted, Chantel will be conducting the election. So that is all for me. Now, I don't know if there's any question.
Great. Thank you, Jameson. Thank you very much. So I'll just go ahead and quickly, we have a few housekeeping items. First, I thank you all for those that have responded to Chantel's entreaty and mine to get volunteers to participate on a variety of BC as well as ICANN-related committees and working groups. As you know, we do have looking for volunteers for the nominating committee. We have received some names, which is great. One for the large business and I think three for small business, and we'll of course have to decide amongst those volunteers who will be our representatives. But thank you all very much for putting your names in the hat. We really appreciate it. As Chantel's noted in the agenda, we have until August 12. We asked for a 1 week extension. It's supposed to be due tomorrow, but we've asked for a 1 week extension. So for those that are on this call who have not considered it, please do consider, certainly for NOMCOM. If you're interested in NOMCOM, you have a few more days to let us know if you want to throw your hat in the ring for consideration. And just let the XCOM or the full BC know. So thank you all for paying attention to that. Additionally, Credentials Committee, we've received some nominees and some candidates for consideration for the Credentials Committee. Welcome to hear more from others as well. If there continue to be folks that are interested in that, welcome you providing your name to the BC for consideration. I don't think we have a set time frame deadline, I guess, for that, as far as I know, but we would hope to have that finalized soon as well. So for those that are interested in Credentials Committee, please do let the BC know. And as you, I think, received yesterday a reminder from Chantel regarding the survey on particular issues, in the new charter, the new proposed charter. This is a result of our last call, and the charter is open. The survey is open until more or less the end of the day, August 17th. I know we've received some responses so far, but welcome other members who have not yet responded to do so. As Chantel notes, it's just one representative per member should respond to the survey. Respond to the survey, and it is open to voting and non-voting members. As long as you're a member of the BC, you're welcome to participate in this survey if you so choose. And as Chantel notes, if you have not received the survey link, please let her know, and she will resend it to you so you can complete it by the end of the day, August 17th. And then lastly, just for planning purposes, the next BC full BC members meeting call will be on August 18th, 2 weeks from today, same time. And then the one following that will be 3 weeks later rather than the normal 2 weeks because of, at least in the U.S., because of Labor Day weekend is sort of a butt that would be the next logical meeting. So we're going to do September 8th. Will be the next second after the 18th meeting. We'll do the September 8th meeting, and of course, as Jimson has noted, we will have a separate BC members call on Monday, August 29th, time, I guess, to be determined with regard to the GNSO counselor election. So we'll have a candidates call on Monday, August 29th, but sort of in between the two full BC members calls. But so it's for planning purposes, that's what we expect for the next roughly month of BC activity. Are there any questions, concerns, other issues that folks have that want to raise that right now? Phil, I see your hand raised.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Phil, for the record. I just want to note, I put two links in the chat box to two articles that came out yesterday about a new IRP decision in which three applicants seeking community status brought an IRP, and the results are very damning for ICANN, for lack of transparency, lack of objectivity by the Board Governance Committee, interference by ICANN legal staff and what was supposed to be an independent third-party evaluation process. So I just want to make sure BC members are aware of that. I think it's the transparency group and Workstream 2 is going to have to look at that very carefully, but it's a very disturbing report, and it's about things that happened a few years ago, but all the players who engaged in that conduct are still there. So I'd urge BC members to take a look at that as we move into Workstream 2 issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. Jimson?
Yeah, thank you, Chris. Mary Lynn mentioned something about outreach, so I think it's good for me to also inform members about that, since Andrew Mark is also not on the call. The BC outreach is planned in conjunction with AFRICTA Summit on October 12-14. This has been running annually now. And also, the outreach committee working seriously to have your BC exclusive outreach in Hyderabad in conjunction with ANAFCOM, that is the Indian ICT Industry Association. And also, we've had meetings with ICANN Business Engagement, that is Chris Modini group, towards more effective outreach in Hyderabad as well. So I just would like to let you know about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Jimson, and this is Chris. I should also just add to that, I will be attending an event put on by the Indian equivalent of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Indian Chamber of Commerce, in Delhi the day or two before the Hyderabad meeting, wearing both my BC chair hat but also, of course, my own corporate hat, but using it as an opportunity for additional BC outreach in Delhi to drum up interest in ICANN matters and issues, and perhaps even get attendees at that event to go ahead and take the short flight to Hyderabad for the ICANN meeting. So I will be doing a little bit of outreach on my own just prior to the ICANN meeting. Any other thoughts, questions, concerns, issues for folks? Okay, if not, then I will give you 10 minutes of your day back. And thank you all very much for being on the call, and we will look forward to talking to you in just a couple of weeks. Chantel, I think we can end the recording.
Thank you, everyone. Operator, you may now stop the recording. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and enjoy the rest of your day.